This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
السلام عليكم.
السلام ورحمة الله.
طيب الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. I have the infamous Sheikh Yasir Saqiba, the amazing duo. Okay. There's a very important portion in this whole presentation or workshop that we won't be able to get to because it's just lengthy, and I think it really deserves a night. And what I was thinking, inshallah, is we'll announce this, not this coming Friday. I don't know how many of you know about our Friday night program. We have a Friday night bandy program. We call it FF. Is it? Yeah, we call it Friday Family Night. FFN, that's what we call it. So if you ever see that in any of the emails, that's what it means. Friday Family Program. Friday Night Family Program. And basically, not next Friday. Next Friday we have a program scheduled. The following Friday, we'll do a follow-up session because there's a very important portion that we won't be able to get to. It's really marriage, but the fiqhi aspect of marriage is kind of dry. But people need to know their rights and their obligations, and they need to pay attention to their obligations more than their rights. Because I keep repeating this: on the day of judgment, Allah Subhanahu wa Taala is not going to ask you about your rights, but rather the questioning will be about your duties and your obligations, whether you have fulfilled them or not. So many times people focus, last thing we want to happen is people go home tonight and say, the sisters say to the brothers, you know, to their husbands, you see what the Sheikh said, please, you know, pay attention, all of that was for you. And then the brother said, you heard what he said about the microwave thing? Yeah, we always do it, although we don't have a microwave. Yeah. So, we need to really remember, we're not here to give each side, you know, the ammunition that they need to attack and bash and bomb the other side. We're really here to help men. I tell you, and Sheikh Fatima, Sheikh Yasir and I always share these things. Here, in the American society, 90% of college graduates and others get married. 50% of them end up getting divorced. Right? Now, we always brag in Muslim communities, oh, we have the lowest divorce rates. We have the lowest domestic violence issues. Guess what? There are many factors involved in that. The truth of the matter is that we actually don't have lower divorce rates. We don't really know. We don't have statistics in the studies. That's number one. Number two, even the statistics and the studies within the Muslim community now are showing very alarming divorce rates. 32 to 35%, according to some studies, 35%. You know, and maybe, and this was a study that was done, that was concluded 5 years ago. Maybe by now it is somewhere around 40%. That means four out of every 10 marriages end up in divorce. And they end up in divorce courts, and it just gets ugly. And I tell you, the imams, being an imam for about 10 years, Sheikh Yasir and Sheikh Abdullah, in addition to being imam, they're professional counselors, and they have the, Wise Living, amazing actually program, which I advise the community really to push forward. We need more of those kind of empowerment, motivational type of sessions that will help us, inshallah, communicate better and relate to each other in a better fashion. So the part that is concentrated on the fiqhi aspect, rights and obligations according to the different schools of thought, inshallah we'll do a follow-up session on that, because it's important for people to know that. Because sometimes lack of knowledge when it comes to those issues cause a lot of problems. People don't know Islamically what are their rights and what are their obligations. Some of the brothers may go like, oh, what? It is not her obligation Islamically to cook for me and to clean the house. According to the majority of opinions and to the strongest of all opinions, she's actually volunteering and she is donating her time and her effort. It's part of her good moral obligation to make it to Jannah. But it is not really a duty. And this could be surprising. Likewise, there are many sisters who don't know the rights that the husband has. So this is very critical. Again, please, focus on your obligations and your duties. Because if you're really serious about pleasing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and fulfilling the purpose for which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created you in this life, which is to please Allah, you would focus on your obligations and duties. Again, Allah will ask you about them on the day of judgment, not necessarily about your rights. In fact, you may be rewarded for giving up or not really demanding some of your rights. Just keep that thought in mind. Alright. Having said that, inshallah, we have many areas to cover and many issues to really discuss with our guest speakers. I had the privilege, actually one of us, Chikasa and I went to school together, so just, you know, and we were roommates, and I remember when he was much, much slimmer, and he was a fine young man, I don't know what happened, but I remember Chikasa, you know, we had some fun together. But what happened is, you know, he came to his home state, California, I was in the East Coast. So we were apart for a while. And then I came, and one day we were both invited to a conference where we both spoke there. But I attended one of his sessions. And it was titled, if I remember correctly, she has to correct me if I'm wrong. It was titled, Prophetic Guidance and Conflict Resolution, something like that. Prophetic Steps, Conflict Resolution.
Was it good?
It was one of the best I've ever heard.
Right.
Just amazing how he tied the hadith to those communication and conflict resolution, I don't want to call them techniques, but, you know, methods. Techniques don't really work. A lot of brothers look for techniques to please one another and to really get over the problem. Techniques don't work. Sheikh Sa'adullah said something that is very, a key word, remember this, connection, finding the connection. We know our rights, we know our obligations in most cases, but we don't create a connection between that and our behavior. So in that sense, Sheikh Yasser, if I may have your attention, his wife is like giving him a look. He always does that, doesn't he? Just like he hears you, and then he's just, okay, what did he say? Alright, Sheikh Yasser, if I may have your input on this. Sheikh Sa'adullah mentioned amongst the six C's, and I had a question. You mentioned communication and consideration. Now, one of those complaints that I hear a lot from brothers is, and if you remember, you know, Men from Mars, Women from Venus, you know, Dr. Gray talks about the man's cave, you know what I'm talking about. So the brothers sometimes come home and they need to be left alone. So how do you balance communication obligations with consideration? Because sometimes in order to really communicate, you have to have what? Consideration. You have to consider the right moment, the right time to really bring up something. And so if you could just elaborate on that. Yes, since you were the first speaker.
Communication, put very simply, is the process of exchanging information between two people. And sometimes we, like Sheikh Sa'adullah said, we tend to talk a lot, but we do not say much. As far as communication is concerned, there are three points to keep in mind. Point number one, the person is more important than the point. The person is more important than the point. There is a tendency that we would have to make the point regardless of what it does to the person. What good is a point if you lost the person? But she was not getting the point. And they insist that at any expense, the point must be gotten across to the other person, even if it means that the person is lost. Save the person, make the point later on. But what we want to do is, no matter what it does to the person, make the point at any expense. And that is not acceptable. Number two, many times, being kind is more important than being right. There is this tendency of making sure that it's got to be right, it's got to be done this way, again, regardless of whether it's kind or it is not kind. So keep this in mind. Sometimes you say, maybe it's not this or it's not that, but at this point, being kind is more important than being right. And finally, the point that Sheikh Sa'ad al-Din made, and that is, say what you mean and mean what you say. Otherwise, so much is exchanged, but nothing is really said. They say that there are 8 levels of communication. 8 levels of communication. Most families, they go to sleep after they have been to the second level of communication only. Give an example. So that the first level of communication is cliché talk, where the person who's talking doesn't really mean it, the person who is responding back doesn't really mean it, but it's just cliché. This is the stuff that you do when you pick up your son or your daughter from school. Hey, how was the school? Good. What did you do? Nothing. Alhamdulillah. And nobody's even paying attention to what is being said. Hey, how's it going? And you just walk by them. You really don't care for how they're going. But it's the cliché talk. It's the cliché talk. It's what people do. And then the second level is people exchanging immediate information, immediate factual. Did you pay the bill? Did you send the letter? Did you make that phone call? Did you fill out the application? And they said most people go to sleep after that. Even though there are 8 different depths to communication, people go to sleep at that point. And that is it. There was no exchange of ideas. There was no exchange of opinions. There was no exchange of feelings. There was no understanding for the person's ideas or feelings or the opinions. You didn't get a chance to sympathize with them, empathize with them. None of this stuff went on, yet people go to sleep. Remember that in New York, in the East Coast, when people lost their electricity for about 5 days, of the comments that were made, well, there was a couple who had been married for 25 years. They had no electricity. And they lived, let's say, in the 25th floor, so going up and down was almost unknown. So they were there in the dark, no internet, no TV, no radio, no book to be read or anything like that. And you know what they said? They said, we have done more talking in the past 3 days than we have done in our entire marriage for 25 years. Because these distractions were not there. And if you count it, how much real talk do we do when we are together? It becomes a bit problematic. So, you know, these are just some of the issues that we need to pay attention to. You know, Sheikh, do it. Can you put this on, please? The thingy? This thingy here?
Screen on.
Screen on.
I'm sorry. Screen on.
You can tell Sheikh Yasin hangs out with a lot of high schoolers. Okay, in the meanwhile, while we get that up, inshallah, running, we can always present this. Inshallah, because we want to engage the audience, inshallah, we're going to take a question from each side. And since this doesn't happen to be on my right side, inshallah, we're going to start from that side. So we're going to take questions, and please limit your question or your comment to 30 seconds, or 10 words or less, 2 words less. Okay? Yes.
Yes. I think
Okay. Now thank you for Sheikh Sabrullah, but about Sheikh Yasser, there is something I'd like to comment on. You, when something went wrong with your computer, you said, I forgot that I am in Omar al-Farouk. What does this mean? And is this the reason that you came late half an hour?
Don't ever mess with Omar al-Farouk. Okay, one big lesson we've learned. Never mess with Omar al-Farouk. We have some loyal veterans here. They're going to tear you apart. You see, the thing is, okay, I've been an imam of Muslims by the name, Abu Bakr Siddiq. And everybody was mild there, and they were like, laid back. And then I come to Umar al-Farouk, and everybody's like, I'm like, okay, so the name has a lot to do with it. So you read, Umar al-Farouk. See, you got it?
I'm trying to make a statement.
I think the question you asked, you mentioned earlier on about communication and consideration, that the brother comes home from work, and then of course you want some chill time. I think it's also important to realize that sometimes the wife works too, and she comes home as well, and then you expect them to be ready, for example. So sometimes, I mean, the consideration is not only that of duties that nobody should be ready. It's how we understand that though sometimes, of course when I come home I never fool to be ready. But there are, like for example, my wife doesn't really work, she's not working at such time. At the moment in time she has relatives from South Africa who are here. So normally she would prepare food. If I'm at home I would prepare food sometimes, but then she comes back and then I find she didn't prepare the food, but she didn't come back yet. Sometimes we become so accustomed to having everything the way we feel it's supposed to be that we feel it's been owed to us. So that's part of the problem. Part of the consideration is, yes, that she must realize or whoever's working needs some chill time and just be left alone and so on. But sometimes people feel a little left alone for speaking. Don't tell me the kids' homework. I don't have to go to the concert. I don't have to go to the game. You drop them. This is not my job. So I think, again, to check the point of communication is very, very important. From the outset, there must be an understanding of shared responsibility, of shared ownership of what we need to do, of how we can selflessly do something that make it easier for the other one. Rather than you do your task, I do my task, I do nothing at home, you do everything at home. I think, the idea of sharing and caring is equally important. The idea of sharing responsibility is also important.
Yeah, I want to turn this, instead of it being like Dr. Phil's style of being, the fulcrum style. So I'm going to go back to that point. What I was saying actually is, okay, if I want to really be understood, if I really want to get my point across, shouldn't I wait for the other persons to be ready? Sometimes, brothers come home and assume that the wife had nothing to do, so she's ready for him just to bombard her with all of his, what he did, and what kind of, difficulties he had in his day. Maybe she had a frustrating day with the kids, so they assume that. Sometimes the sisters assume that, okay, now he's home now, I get to tell him about everything that happened, and the kids did, although he might need some time to catch his breath or maybe make up all the salah that he didn't make, what I'm saying? So what I'm saying is, where does consideration come in here?
Why don't we talk to each other? So when I come home, I need to pick a wash and a bath, I want to watch the news maybe. After then we can talk about things. We can agree on that kind of thing.
Okay.
And then, if something is urgent, it's urgent. Urgency is not the, urgency and emergency. There's no time span. Any time is important. It's important. Child is hurt. You need to pay something. Something happened. Something else. But generally, just speak about it. So, when I come home, I'm just a bit, tired, the traffic and so on. Many discussion, I have a rule with my wife. I don't speak anything about finances for an hour before I sleep. I don't. Bring up any time during the day, but before we sleep, I don't speak anything about finances. This is one rule I have. So she knows that. I won't be against it. She brings it up, but she tries not to bring up. Tomorrow morning to pay something. She makes a note of it. So we know that, and certain things she doesn't like. I think that. So we have an agreement about that. But it's the emergency you speak about.
Brothers, someone, brother side.
One brother asked a question, by the way, during the Salat, and I mean, could I ask?
Yeah, please.
The question was that in Sheikh Yasir mentioned, or even something that I may have said, about intercultural marriages. Now, don't get me wrong. If you can find someone from the same culture, the same age, the same village, the same educational background, there's nothing wrong with that. My point is, some people assume because you have that, you have everything. When you find someone that meets all those requirements, it means that you stand on the same footing or the same level, the same place at that time. There's no guarantee that you'll be able to walk together through the journey of life. That's a different thing. So be very cautious about this. If you can find someone, I've been asking your parents, say, okay, I've got a nice girl for you, or a nice boy for you, and you find the person is nice and you're happy with that, there's nothing wrong with that. So one brother was implying, or he thought that I implied, that, you know, culture is not important at all. No, no, if you find someone, it's no harm. But it shouldn't become a barrier. I know many people who do not marry because the person doesn't have the cultural background. They say, for example, they live both in Arab background, they say, we don't marry Palestinians, or we don't marry Lebanese, or we don't marry Egyptians. We find that kind of thing. Or, even within the culture, we don't want someone who's dark complexion. I don't want my kids to be dark. They speak to me and I'm dark myself. So people tell me that. So you can lie. Like light skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, pink lip, whatever you like, that's your choice. But don't be based on race. Don't be based on color. This is very important to understand. So sometimes,
isn't that funny how sometimes we get people come, I'm like, oh my God, it's going to wear, you know, marry someone dark. All the three brothers are talking. My God, you're so blind or something? Okay, anyways, you have a religion. That's it.
This is just, you know, it's a Kyoto thingy, because Sheikh Muhammad, he keeps saying thank you, so I've decided to save him all that stuff.
His feet are sinners.
Okay, so I just want to share the thank you. That's it to you.
Freak out, they're gonna panic, they're gonna have, you know, really. So, And here's a story that actually illustrates that. They said that there's this guy that attended an encouragement workshop, one of those, like, you know, those workshops that you do in Wise Living, empowerment and encouragement. So he came out of the workshop very, very, very motivated. He's like, who do I have in my life that I've never, you know, that it has been a while since I, you know, thanked and appreciated. And then he remembered his wife. Oh, I even forgot all the time today. So he goes like, okay, I gotta do something really nice. So he goes, stops by a drugstore and picks up like very fast, like expensive box of chocolate left over from, you know, Valentine's Day. And then he goes and buys, like, you know, he pays like $70 for a bouquet of flowers. And then he just goes, you know, and to make a statement, instead of using his key, he just stands by the door and rings the bell. So his wife comes, she opens the door, she sees him. She goes, I can't take it anymore. And I said, I want divorce. He's like, why, honey? And he just, she's sobbing, she's crying. She's like, this has been a horrible day. That's it, I've had it. I can't, I want to wake up. What's wrong? What happened? And she says, well, first of all, Ashley fell down with the swing and she broke her arm, her daughter. And then the cat ripped the curtain. The TV went blank. And now at the end of the day, my husband comes home drunk. So they say that if you show this kind of sudden change, these people don't expect people to really, really understand what happened to you. They would think that you were either diagnosed with a deadly disease, or that you were struck by lightning, that something happened to your mind. So anyways, if you get motivated, do it gradually. Chef Stagula, I had actually a question for you. For Chef Salama Chef Yasser. And there was an incident, and by the way, we share a lot of, you know, they share a lot of wisdom with me, and I share a lot of problems with them. So, but one of those things that happen in marriage and relationships is the lack of positive nature or positive change. Like, positivity gets missed somewhere, and all of a sudden it becomes negativity. Remember what Chef Yasser was saying about before when people were engaged, any laughter, any sound, any voice, any movement, any gesture, it's funny and cute and, you know, so attractive. And afterwards things change. And the same things that may have been cute before become, they get on your nerves afterwards. So what happens to the positive, what goes wrong? Any questions?
He said it, not I was answering.
I didn't say that.
Okay. No, I think, you know, when you have a relationship, it's a process. It's a process. That's how it unfolds. But it's how you are able to negotiate through the traffic of that process. How do you go along with it? Sometimes people, they have this attitude. And attitude is very important. Attitude is a reflection of yourself in the mirror of life. And your attitude towards things very often reflect who you are. Be careful about this. You have many instances of people, for example. I have instances of people, for example. Slightly on the topic, but to give an example to explain my point. A person may be marrying a girl and you mix her and she's Muslim or comes Muslim or whatever maybe. And they're from the United States and the guy is really Islamic and goes to class. And we meet Sheikh Yasser's class. MashaAllah, come to class. Then afterwards, suddenly, he has a problem. You shouldn't wear hijab, you shouldn't go to the masjid, you shouldn't do this. What happens sometimes is, you don't realize that people grow. They grow with you, but they may grow at a different pace than you go. They may find things, they may not react to things the same way they reacted to the first place. Now, you know when they say when you play with the feet and the leg, they call it footsies, and it's cute before you, you know, when you marry initially. After the honeymoon, it becomes boring, you keep in the leg. The point I'm making is how you are able to understand that you are evolving in that relationship. You evolve. Sometimes you make a joke, it's funny. Sometimes the wrong time is not funny. You see, it's very important to understand what frame of mind you are in and how sometimes something which can be cute, which is done out of place, out of context, is not cute anymore. Something which can be loving in a particular context may be problematic in another context. Be very careful. If you, for example, you have a mother-in-law or a father-in-law who is very critical about how clean the place is and if the place is dusty and so on and so forth, and you make a joke about that, and you know there will be a reaction, it may be a joke about yourself, but almost other people is not. So always remember, check the reaction. What effect do you expect from the comment you make? What effect do you expect from the action you are doing? If you think, when it was always cute, in this circumstance, in this situation, would the response be what I want it to be? Always look at it. Rasul said, إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالنِّيَّةِ and also إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالْخَوَاتِيمِ. It's another hadith. Actions are by intentions, but also by the outcome. And that's what Rasul said, if you do something, and you find, but if your intention is good, if you decide to do something, and you see it's flowing out to be something good, then continue doing it. You see? And if you find the way, though your intention was good, the way it's flowing out is not turning positive, then stop. You see? مَنْ عَرَضَيَ فَانْشِكَنْ فَلْيَنْدُوا عَاقِمَتَهُ إِنْ كَانَ خَيْرًا فَمْدِي وَإِنْ كَانَ شَرًا فَانْتَهِ. So even if your intention is good, circumstances, situation, and one part. The other part is also talking about the other part of the question about how people look at things. It's very important to realize that in any situation, you know, there's a negative side to something, there could be a positive side to something. You may something where people are the same mind, the same level, the same mood, in other words. If you go to a funeral and make a joke, it's not the right place to make a joke. So do understand that. If you go to a wedding and make a joke about your friend, that's different being at a wedding making a joke about your friend and making a joke between yourself among the friends, among guys, oh this guy, oh man, he's been so lazy, he used to hardly do his homework and his room was so filthy, and I have to clean his room for him, and everybody laughs. That same joke at his wedding reception is not a joke, it's a revelation. Now though it's true, be very careful about being truthful. Because something is true, it doesn't mean you must say it. I like Sheikh Yasir's shirt and jacket. I can say it looks nice, nothing wrong with that. I don't like his shoe, I don't have to say that. You know, I'm truthful, no, you should. Commenting somebody for something, complimenting, doesn't imply that it was also saying the negative. So this is very important to understand. So in any instance, what is the outcome, what is your objective? That's why when you open your mouth, consider four things. Is the thing true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it beneficial? Then you open your mouth. Especially in close relationships. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it beneficial? If not, don't say it.
I gotta write this down. Jeff, speaking of Yasser's shoes, this time I think he is
better.
Yeah, I think I helped him pick them up, and I think his wife approved it, so it matches this time, so it was just hypothetical. This time is
just very quickly to add to what Sheikh Fadhil said. It's funny sometimes in the relationship what people go for. Because in the relationship there is also a reflection of who we really are and what kind of character do we have and do we bring into this relationship. When I counsel couples, especially those couples, so what's the problem? And they have this ability to articulate with great eloquency what is wrong with her and what is wrong with him. And then I say, you know what, let's start on a positive note here. What do you appreciate most about your wife? And that question is so problematic and it never failed. What do I appreciate about my wife? Appreciate, A-P-P-R-E, appreciate, you know what I'm saying, like appreciate about my wife, and it takes so long for people to say anything. They literally become very speechless when you say, what do you appreciate most about your wife or about your husband? See, what we do is that we tend that when we come home, and it's for the bickering and for the arguments, but then when we are outside home, that's when I play with my friends, that's when I joke with them, that's when I have a good time. But then I come back home and that's what's waiting for me. Naturally, where do I want to spend most of my time? I want to spend most of my time where it is more fun and there is less, you know, don't worry about the kids people. I love kids, mashallah, barakallah. I love them to death. That's why I want to kill them. But the idea is what? The idea is that in these things, it's really about what do you look for when you come home? Sometimes, does anybody have a pen? Just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, and hopefully, I don't mean to exclude anybody, but if you are colorblind, please forgive me, you may not be able to participate in this this exercise. Do you all see this?
Yes.
You do see it? Brothers, do you all see this? What do you see? A red dot. Most times, people spend their lives looking at the red dot. Nobody said anything about the white part, even though it is the greater part of the paper. Nobody said anything about it. But everybody is looking at the red dot. And once you keep looking into the red dot, guess what? You miss out on the rest of the paper. You become fixated on this red dot only. Sometimes we are so busy looking for what is wrong, we do not get the opportunity to spend what is going on right. And with families, we have a tendency to do so. So consumed by what's wrong with her, how bad her cooking is, or you know what, he smells so bad. But the point is we are consumed by that red dot where we fail to see any other thing, you know what, that seems to be happening in our. It's really by the end of the day, like they say, two prisoners looked out at the prison bars. One saw mud, the other saw stars. Whose fault is it? The mud was there, the stars were there, but what do you want to see? Now this is not to, you know, become simplistic about what is going on, but it has a lot to do with attitude and perception and the way we choose to see things.
Really good, Shane. I both of your comments on this question, that it's a written question. Do we have anyone? Okay, well, I'm going to come back to the brother. But a quick technical question. It talks about ruling of on wife working. Does she have to work? Does the wife have to work?
Does the husband have to work?
I think so.
This thing would be. In Islam, there is the idea of qiwama, which will be the idea of maintenance and the idea of responsibility. That is there, and I think, I do not know from which angle the question is being asked.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a trick question.
Because you say
that way, yes.
Yeah, so then you get a problem, because then people bring all other aspects into it. Can you work? Can you work within the company where there's no mahab? You're working in an office environment and all that stuff. But just generally, can people work? I think, you know what? The idea is that I prefer that one parent should be looking after the kid if they can do so. I'm not too happy with the notion that, especially smaller kids, you know, from the period of nurturing, that they should be left with someone else. And so it's easier to say than to do. Those who cannot help it, they cannot help it. Because very often, it is more than two jobs sometimes to make ends meet. That's one thing. So you must look at the reality. It's easier to give fatwa from offices than to look at the reality of life. So we'll be very cautious about this. They have general principles of Sharia and say, well, you know, woman shouldn't be at home, work, or man, whatever it should be, what should be, what could be, it's one thing. The ideals are one thing, and the reality must be addressed. And the idea of fish is to look at it, at the Sharia and apply it to the reality that the people face. And I think that if there's a necessity, then both should work. Sometimes it may be that both work, and if, I mean, the most necessary, if you find that we have certain goals, we're able to make ends meet, you have kids who are going to college, or you want to save money for the college, you need to find ways of having an income. And specifically in America, you find many brothers and sisters go to university. And very often, sisters end up not working anymore. So very often, those talents go to waste. And I think if it's possible, if both can contribute, it'll be good. But it shouldn't be the expense of anything more important like caring for the children. So if they need to work, there's no harm in the brother or the sister working. Both work, it's okay.
Alright.
Another question here,
right? Yeah, there's a follow-up question, right, that topic, but I guess this pretty much answers this, yeah.
The question is?
It's getting married. At a later age matter. Example, age over 40. Age over at 40, is that what
you mean? I think
getting married later, yes.
See,
the question has to do with getting married at a late age. It's somehow, the age example I was given is after 40.
And I wouldn't know, she
had a long enough 40. I know this might be very sensitive.
No. I would very late myself. And the thing is that it depends what you are busy doing. It depends what you are aiming for. In my case, I was in exile out of my country. I couldn't be in my country. I was in exile in Egypt, so one of the excuses why I delayed, and I delayed for some years after that too, by the way. But it depends. Sometimes age can become a barrier. Age itself is not necessarily significant. Age is but a number in some ways. But it does become a problem when sometimes parents find maybe a girl wants to marry a guy who's 45 and she's 18 or something of the nature. And there's no problem religiously, there's no problem physically, chance, but there is an issue, an issue, or the reality which we need to face. If the 45-year-old person gets married to the girl, there's a whole issue of, or vice versa for that matter, there's a whole issue of intimacy, of satisfaction, of maturity. There's also the idea that, don't forget, when he has a child, the first child, going to school, he'll be at least 51, 52 years of age. She'll be 25 or 26, for example, using this example. One of the things that I found that I love sports, and my kids love sports, or my wife loves sports. The only thing I feel, I still play sports, I still do that. I think that had I married her earlier, now though I know, you know, things are the way they are, but assuming I was to have married earlier and things were different, I would have grown up a bit more with my kids and I would have appreciated that fact a bit more. This is what I feel. But just age as a barrier, it shouldn't be a barrier in itself. But there are many other considerations that must come into play. We'll be very careful. I know many people, I know a recent person came to me, 21 years old, the guy 47, so what, if you want to get married? It's not only a cultural thing and so on, there are realities you have to face about maturity, about performance, about interaction, about how you see things, how you view things, you know, and how you connect with each other. What you listen to, what you like to do, you might have to go to the mall and do some shopping. Mall, I don't know, mall, it's a mall. You know, we get so a lot of issues that could come in with that. So age in itself is not a problem, but the age gap could be a problem.
How many people do we have here who are unmarried? Yeah, people, single people. Yeah. I'm just, when I do my left hand, that means I'm not part of it. I'm just showing you the cost of raising it. If I raise my right hand, that means I'm included in it. So I'm just showing you the cost of raising it now. Oh, sorry. Okay, so we'll get to that. Okay, after. Yes, go.
Islamically, does your mother have priority over your wife?
Okay, this is what we call. Okay. What do we call this? Trick question? Not trick question. What? Legal question, sir? This is a question where you know.
You know, I said something earlier about compatibility time bombs. And in it I mentioned that toxic in-laws are compatibility time bombs. When people are fantasizing about the death of their in-laws, that is a problem. And we have these kind of people. They're literally fantasizing. You know, they can almost imagine, you know, a funeral day. And now they are really happy with that, like, not showing up with respect to their, you know, husband or wife, but they're fantasizing about this. Sheikh Sa'adullah will tell you it's not this or that. That is really not the ideal. The mother has her place and the wife does have her place. But what bothers me nowadays is mostly about in-laws question and how much control they want to have and how much involvement they want to have in the marriage. I see this to be an unbelievably such a very, it's so problematic that it's really leaving people invaded. Literally, that was the expression that was given to me. Sister came, she said, I feel invaded by my in-laws. They want to know everything that we do. They want to have a say in where we live. How many kids are we going to have? When are we going to have our kids? There was one mother, she told her son, I want her pregnant in March. She started to be pregnant. Now, when you have that kind of mentality, you know, and supposedly the father or the son is torn between, you know, well, this is my mother and this is my wife and whom do I...
Can I just get to your question? Okay, forgive me, I'm not trying to show over anything, but I really can't relate to this one. I really can't relate to it. You know, just repeat this again.
Relate
to this kind of relationship. I mean, I personally think that the couples are responsible. And I think it's the obligation of the spouse to help their spouse fulfill their obligations towards their guests. If I care about my wife and her well-being, just like I care about her praying and making salat and stuff like that, she does it on her own, she doesn't have to have it. But I'm saying it's like I care about it, and I would be concerned if she wouldn't, you know, her religious obligations. I would be concerned if she is not fulfilling her religious obligations towards her parents. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it really depends on the couples.
It's very simple, very frankly. The answer is simple. Practically, I'd be different. First of all, I've got a problem with another question. I've got a problem with the question. Not the question, by the way, the question. Because it presupposes a tug of war. It presupposes that one at the expense of the other. There's no question. There's no question about the position of the mother. There's no question about it. You know, Rasul was asked, and there's numerous reasons about this in different poems, who has no right to my respect? And the Rasul said, your mother, then your mother, then your mother, then your father, then everybody. That's very true. But what I have a problem with is how people take that particular statement and use it. And use it to undermine other relationship. A good mother, knowing that your wife is the mother of your kids, is speaking to another mother. Mother to mother, because she's also mother. She's not your mother anymore. And number one. Number two, as big as I am, I'm still my mother's baby. When I go to South Africa, something like the hair is gone. I got no hair on my head. But it's the train. She still treats me like a small old boy somewhere. You know, you don't know, why are you wearing your mother's shirt? It's a rust shirt. Wear cream. Okay. There's no harm because she loves me. But it becomes a problem. Oh, your wife bought you that? My mother doesn't do that. Why don't you wear the one I bought you? I've got a problem because she's intruding now. I'm now a man. I'm not a kid anymore. I can choose what I want to wear. Neither must she impose, nor must she impose. Just because you have a status, he's your imam. He's my sheikh, by the way. Right? But if he tells you to do something which is not the right thing to do, I will not do it. You can't say, but you know that. So if my mother needs water and my wife has been birthed, who should I go to? You'd be crazy to go give your mother water. She mustn't give her water. She's giving birth right now. If a person outside is working, maybe even a non-Muslim, anybody is hurt outside, and I can help him, and the adhan is going off, Allah come first. Or, no, it's still, I can't say, well, I think you should make salah first, and the person leaves, inshallah, dua for you. No. It doesn't mean I'm putting the injured person before Allah. It's part of my human duty. As part of my being a Muslim, to alleviate the suffering of another. I have got an excuse from Allah that you can make your salah, but later. For example. So, to ask the question, also you put that kafir guy outside there, maybe a drunkard, before Allah, the question is wrong. The question is, and not your question, I know why you ask the question, but the point is, this is the notion. There's an implication of a tug of war. Mother will all be mother, not even the father comes before the mother. But I think it's important to realize not tug of war. And you know who's the better of the two? The one who realizes that, you know, I want to be careful for the other one. I think sometimes it happens when people get married, they almost feel that they are being shared. You have your mother, you are your mother's son always, your daughter always. And now you're a husband, you're somebody's father. You have a relationship with your mother, which is very unique, even different from your father's. You have a relationship with your wife, which is unique, different from your mother's. You have a relationship with your kids, different from your wife. Each one deserves their rights. And none of them have the right to impinge upon the other one. The question is not the status. Mother is first. That's true. Mother is first. But how does it come into play? If it's been done with care, you do what I tell you. You get better than I tell you. Yes, we can discuss about things. I know parents, in relatives of mine, when the kid is born, the mother will tell the son what the name is. All the other sisters know the name, and at the name giving, we ask the wife, and the imam, the name, I don't know. And all the sisters know, is deliberately show the wife, you're an outsider, you decide, it's her kid. That is nonsense. That mother-in-law is a mischief maker. She's not a good mother. But sister, mother, be very careful. You see, one thing is to be respectful, another thing is worthy of respect. There are numerous hadith in this about teachers. We are teachers, alhamdulillah, you must respect your teacher. That's true. But if we lie to you, if you see something wrong, you have the duty to become a teacher. I respect you as a teacher. But you are losing that by saying something which is false. So this is very important to understand. I don't think it's a tug of war. Mother has a place and it's very unique among all creation, even in relation to the father. But at the same time, don't take any relationship as a tug of war, because there will be first my mother, then my mother and my wife, then my mother and my wife, and my kids. No. That is his place. That is his place. You are one person, but you are a thousand different things to a thousand different people. I'm his teacher, I'm his student, I'm his friend, I'm her husband, I'm his father. I'm still the same person. If you can maintain a degree of integrity in each one of those, then inshallah you are Muslim.
Just for the record, I love my mother-in-law. I gained 25 pounds because of her, so I gotta give it to my mother-in-law. Okay, Sheikh Yasser, I want your comment on this. Sheikh Yasser spoke about the part of choosing a wife you know, one of those interesting arguments, just a quick one for those people, I know you don't make the majority, but you know, I read somewhere in an article written by a therapist with a PhD, actually not Muslim, Baker, Nader, something like that last name. But he was saying that that the best method to find a compatible, to cast our compatibility, a compatible spouse is through the recommendation of your best friend's spouse. What do you think about that? I'm serious, I'm not making this up. I actually have a magazine in my office, just like, you know. Yeah. But I'm saying, they're saying that the bar scene and all these, even churches, you know, they're saying that that doesn't work as much as the recommendation of the spouse of your best friend, who pretty much, since you're best friends, and kind of know what to, what do you think of that?
No, I don't think there is anything wrong as far as the way we are introduced to other people. One thing that is problematic in our Muslim community is the lack of opportunities for people to meet each other. Not only the lack of it, but the minute people, almost the times, it's about people coming to the masjid, but then you've got all sorts of barriers, where the sisters are kept on one side, the brothers are kept on another side, they don't get to see one another, they don't get to know who is out there. So I believe that we need to pay attention to this idea of facilitating for our brothers and sisters to meet. In other places, you know, you may have families, your sisters, your mother, they can look for you, but that may not be available to anybody out there. It is a good idea for people who know us and know the other party to introduce us, thinking that, you know what, these two people make a good couple. But remember, our decisions should not be based on, because they recommended it, now I must be doing that. It's a good way to facilitate for us. But then, once we meet, I must understand that, do I think that this person is good for me or not? Very grateful to the spouse of my friend, but I would have to come up to that conclusion that I believe that this person is compatible.
Okay, that's the important, I mean, one has to do that part. You know, sometimes people come and I want to get married, and some massages in some senses might have applications and stuff like that, and you fill out the type of qualities you're looking for. And for me to recommend you or to write to help you, I don't even know you, I barely know you. How can I, you know, do that? So that's what I was trying to say, that people who know us the best might be able to help us. And people, and this really happens. A lot of married couples, there are many people, they come, Sheikh, we really want this matrimonial service in your message. This magazine has one of them, right? And you should just take some time and read that page. It has some interesting, you know, just strange endings. I'm not even getting into that. But people say this, and then the minute they get married, right, and they find that, you know, Mr. Right, this is They forget about their friends, their cousins, their... What about couples? You know, I know that, you know, his wife might have some good friends that she can recommend to the best friend. You know what I'm trying to say? What about couples helping the single, you know, friends? Because they know him the best. How is a man going to set up good people? One time I had a brother come to me with a list of 200 qualities that he's looking for. How am I supposed to check for all these 200 qualities?
Easy. Ask him how many has he got of them.
But here's what happened to him, Tim. After, you know, every year he started dropping, like he takes off 10% of the qualities. Finally, he ended up with one quality left. She has to be a female. Chef Yasser, Chef Sabino, inshallah, we have one last interesting article that I read. They surveyed 50 couples, right? They surveyed 50 couples, and they asked them this question: who is your best friend? Right? And I actually did this experiment even in one of my classes on my students. And we separated the brothers and the sisters. The majority of the women in this article, right? 50 couples. The majority of the women named a female best friend. A female best friend. Cousin, neighbor, whatever, classmate. The majority of men, over 50%, either said that they don't really have a best friend or that their wives are their best friends. But here's the catch. Most of those women did not know that their husbands considered them to be their best friends. They acted like it, but they didn't interpret it. So what do you have to say about that? Just where is the problem, you know?
Okay, friends are relationships which you choose, by the way. And you know, there's a lot of recommendations in the hadith, in particular about your friends. And the Rasul also said, for example, you know, be careful, you know, who you befriend, because you become on the lifestyle of your friend, you know. So, friendship is a relationship which you do by choice. Of all the relationships which you do by choice, the most important, far-reaching, intense, intimate one is that of wife. So obviously it should be, first of all, a friend. Second part is that normally your friends, you meet them at your pleasure. We hang out together, we have lunch together, play basketball together or something, shopping. And then you part. With your wife and your husband, you are together all the time. But some people assume friends are those whom you have at a distance. You engage them in your life when you want to, and you just engage them when you don't want to. You call them, you go with them, you don't want to go, you cut off. With the spouse, you cannot do that. And I think, you know, in a relationship, it's important to understand, specifically in a husband and wife relationship, as I mentioned, it's a commitment, it's a solemn covenant, it's a lifelong partnership, it's also a most intimate relationship. I think, when you say best friend, you must realize what are you looking for. It's someone with whom you can share your inner secrets. It's someone whom you can share your joy. Someone whom you can share your tears.
But am I obligated to let the other person know, or should the other person just figure out that they're my best friend?
No, you should. No. A person who cannot tell their spouse, I love you, is a woman. If you can't tell your husband or wife, I love you, there's something seriously wrong with that. And we have a society where we don't do that. I mean, I give an example of about 3 years ago at the Jumu'ah or Eid at Ibn Adha, and I said, people, Ibrahim alayhi salam's story was much to do with family, but rather father and the son were able to communicate. Oh my son, Allah commanded you to sacrifice you. What do you say? Oh my father, you have been commanded. It's about family. About Isa and Maryam, it's about family. About mother and child. Hajira and Ismail, it's about family. And I spoke a bit about that, and I said, please, for today, I want each and every one of you. You all come and greet me and greet Sheikh Muhammad and everybody. Push up. Go greet your wife, greet your husband, greet your kids. And a daughter came up to me and said, Shazadullah, the first time she was here, you know, she left. After Isha, she left, she was in the audience. She said, for the first time I can remember my father hugging me. First time. Now, the point I'm making is, if you can hug the Imam and the Sheikh, why? It's good, okay, out of respect. saying the ones you care most about. If you can't say you love the ones who you, who mean most to you, and the one to whom those words mean most, the Sheikh Yaz says, oh, good lecture. Everybody says a good lecture. It doesn't mean anything anymore. But when you go to someone and buy a flower or say I love you, it means so much. At the end of it, don't forget, it's those small things that you do that really counts.
Yeah.
And if your wife is not your lover, or your husband is your lover, not your friend, but your confidant, there's something wrong with your relationship.
And if the Prophet did it, then we should do it. The Prophet said in public, he was asked who's the most beloved person to you, and he had no problem declaring it in public and saying, Aisha is wife. I thought that was going to get something on that side. But I have a confession, you know, I have to conclude with this. Sheikh Yasser, you are my second best friend. Alright, one last question I have for the audience and for the imam. Which way should it go? This way?
Yeah.
Or this way?
Yeah.
How many people say it this way? Okay, how many people say it's this way? Well, actually, believe it or not, some couples actually fight with this. I just wanted to bring it up in case, you know. Alright, Jazakumullah khairan for being a wonderful audience.